We're back together again to focus on how to maximize your influence when you don't have any power, or you think you don't have any power, you don't have the right position, or maybe you don't think you know you have more of a position than you do, or you don't feel like you have any authority. You can influence in any situation. The knee-jerk reaction many times is, well, there's nothing I can do, or they're the boss, or they're not going to listen to me. It's another department. It's another company. They won't return my phone calls. They don't want to purchase my product or service. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. We're here to focus on how to maximize your influence in any situation, especially when you feel you don't have any power, you don't have the position. You can do this. Today, I want to focus on mental engagement. This is very important when you're attempting to influence another person. Remember, your goal is to help them influence themselves. The key seems to be if they're not listening to you, if they become indifferent, if they sense you're going to try to persuade them to do something, a lot of times they will resist you. And so there are certain things that you can do, as we understand human nature a little bit, to increase your ability to influence another person. So as a foundation, as we get started here, we need to understand that are we emotional or logical creatures? We like to think we're logical, and that's a knee-jerk reaction for the average person, but we are very emotional. And the key to persuasion is that you need to use both. There's kind of a balance there between emotion and logic. We need to structure our message such a way so we do hit on both. I think Dale Carnegie said it best. He was talking about people. He said, when dealing with people, remember you are not dealing with creatures of logic, but with creatures of emotion, creatures bristling with prejudice and motivated by pride and vanity. That's human nature. We like to think that's not true, but we need to have both logic and emotion. Logic will be more long-term, emotion is more short-term, and the key to understand is that we do react on emotions, but we need to justify with logic. What that means is we are swayed, we are influenced by emotional things, but when the emotion fades, we need to have some type of logic why it was important, why we should do it. When you look at marketing, for example, if you buy something, you're excited about it, when that emotion fades, you need to have some type of a logical reasons why you purchased that. Some studies even show that up to 90% of the decisions we make are based on emotion. We need to have that balance. I like it to call it the twin engines of persuasion. So we need to balance that logic and that emotion. Now, the Journal of General Psychology said, we generally think we make decisions based on fact, but that truly is not the case. It has been found that when a person agrees with a particular message, they tend to perceive it as being more logical or rational. When a person disagrees with the message, they perceive it to be an emotional plea. Meaning, if we agree with what they're talking about, we think it's logical. If we disagree, we think it's emotional. Logic is our conscious mind. Emotion is our subconscious mind. We need to have both. I mean, if you ask somebody why they bought the BMW, you're going to get a lot of logical reasons. You know, resale value, and they need it for their business. And they'll get a list of things. But the reality is it was how it made them feel. We know that when you have a severe headache and you go to the store, you know logically that the national brand is the same as the generic brand, but when you go with a severe headache, you're more likely to buy the national brand. We know that focus groups will get different opinions than when you're doing it by yourself. We know that blind taste tests get different results than when you can actually see the product. We know that when you are evaluating food and you don't like the person across from the table, that'll affect your food evaluations. We know that you don't need any more shoes, but you'll find another reason to buy more shoes or whatever it is. The message being we have to have both. So let's talk about this influence. Now we have this foundation of human nature, is that we need to learn how to involve the person we're trying to persuade. Again, if they're not listening, if they're indifferent, if they're bored, if you haven't grabbed their attention, there is no way you can influence them. Whether it be a boss at work or another department, it doesn't matter. We need influence in every aspect of our life. Your goal here is to involve as many of the senses as you can. Get them to participate in the process. Again, one of the greatest enemies of persuasion and influence is indifference. And they might be listening or even hearing to what you're saying, but if they're not processing it, if it's not becoming real to them, they're very difficult to persuade. What I'm trying to say is if you can get them to mentally engage to your message, to take interest, to pay attention, to take notes, get them to participate in the process, they'll take the ownership of what you're talking about, and they are much easier to persuade. Let me give you some examples. Kurt Lewin was a social psychologist, and he was hired by the United States government to, and this was during one of the Great World Wars, to get Americans to eat more intestinal meats. Okay, this would be tripe or stomach or intestines. I've had it before. It's not that good. But for some reason, people in the United States will not eat intestinal meats. Now, I'm not talking about hot dogs. I'm talking about, you know, true intestinal meats. So he would bring a bunch of people into a room, back then mostly housewives, and they would do a big rah-rah, do it for the troops, because that's where most of the meat was going. Do it for them. Here's how you cook it. Here's some samples. Come on, do it. And only 3% went home to cook intestinal meats for their family. And that didn't work very well. So the next time around, this is what they did. And the results went from 3% to 32%. And this is what happened. All I did is he brought the same people, well, different groups, same demographics into a room and said this. All right, here's the problem. This is what we need to do. It'll help us become more patriotic. If you were the United States government, if you were us, how would you get Americans to eat more intestinal meats? They said, well, why don't you try this? Are you going to do this? And how about this? And what about that? And they persuaded themselves. And that's your goal here. Great persuaders help people persuade themselves. And that whole time, they were coming up with great ideas and they persuaded themselves. That is a key factor. And that's a simple thing to do. If you're at work and you want someone to help you with a project or a neighbor to help you with the fence, you can say things, I need your help. Can I get your opinion? What do you think about this? If you were me, what would you do? I mean, it's a big difference with your neighbor building a fence. Hey, will you help me build a fence versus, hey, let me get some advice. What do you think about this? What would you do in this situation? It goes a long way. Because remember the ego and esteem that we've talked about. If you have a boss at work, for example, and you tell them what they should do or tell them, here's a better idea, you could bruise the ego. And when you ask their opinions and advice, during that process, they persuade themselves. Get them to participate as much as possible. In fact, in sales, they call it the old puppy dog close. I don't know if you've heard that one before, where you go walking by a pet store and you have your son or daughter with you and they're five and they go, want to look at the puppies? You're like, no way. No, we're not looking at the puppies. We're not getting a dog. Not going to happen. But you go in anyway and the store owner sees that apprehension and says something like this. Hey, take it home for the weekend. If you don't like it, bring it back. Okay, and you're stuck. So sometimes if you can get them to taste it, try it, feel it, see themselves doing it, visualize themselves doing it, see themselves moving into a home, see themselves taking your product or using your service, you become much more persuasive because they're persuading themselves. It's even how you talk. When cable first came out, people wouldn't get it because they didn't need it. They've never had it before. So if they went to people and say, do you want cable? 20% would say yes. But if they said something like this, imagine how cable TV will provide you with broader entertainment, and they would paint the picture and having friends coming over to watch movies and sporting events. The compliance rate went from 20% to 47%. If you sold a nutritional product that made people healthier or stronger or thinner, you can talk all day long about this and this and this. Hey, say try it. Get on it. Use it. That's much more persuasive. Get them involved any way you can. In real estate, for example, you're showing somebody a home. Hey, where are you going to put the grand piano? Hey, where's, and have the kids run up and pick their room? Getting them involved is very persuasive. You need to learn to create that experience. You look at America Online, they used to be the biggest. Why? Free CD all over the place. You probably had 20, 30 flow through your fingers in the last 10, 20 years. Free 1,000 hours, get people involved, people stay. That's why car dealerships don't charge $50 for a test drive. They want to get you in that car. In fact, high-end cars, just like Cadillac, let's say you bought a Cadillac 3 years ago, they could show up at your door with the newer version. Say, hey, look, here's the newer version. Why don't you drive it around for 2 weeks? Let us know what you think. If you don't want it, that's fine. Return it. You can't. Your neighbor has said something. You've been smelling the new car smell, which is an association trigger, has new features, and that's much easier to persuade than to try to force it down somebody's throat. Post-it notes, for example, they were a complete failure when they were launched because it was too new. How do you explain a post-it note to someone who's never used it? So if you have a new product or service or a new idea, a lot of people can't see themselves doing it because it's too new. What is that? They haven't used it before. Why would they need it now? I mean, how do you explain a post-it note? A stapleless, glue-not-stick, very long piece of paper thing? It's very difficult unless you get people to use it. So post-it notes were a complete failure, so they brought all the product back to the factory, and they strategically sent boxes of post-it notes to secretaries of the CEOs of all the Fortune 500 companies. Oh, free. They tried it. They used it. They liked it. People ask, what is this? Where did you get it? What is it? And the rest is history. Now we can't do without them. They become a staple because we've used them. Another thing we need to talk about is engaging their senses and kind of understanding that we all have different dominant senses. Most people tend to be very visual. Some people tend to be more auditory, meaning they with their ears. And some people tend to be more kinesthetic, which is more based in feeling. And if you can listen to the words that they use, you can adapt and customize your language to them, and you'll connect better and you'll become more persuasive. Well, let's talk about visual people. And that's about, that's the majority. I don't have an exact number for you, but the majority of the people. See, visually oriented people understand the world according to how it looks to them. They'll notice the details, the object shape, color, size, and texture. And they'll say things like, I see what you mean. From your point of view, how does that look to you? I can picture it. Do you see what I mean? They tend to use words like see, show, view, look, watch, and observe. They're very visual people. So they need to see the chart. They need to see the product or service. They need to see other people using it, and you need to adjust your vocabulary to that visual person. Then auditory people perceive everything according to sound and rhythm. Phrases you would hear would be things like, I hear you. That sounds good to me. Can you hear what I'm saying? Does that ring a bell? Let's talk about it. They use words like hear, listen, sounds, debate, silence, discuss. They're very auditory people. You need to be more auditory in your language, and they might need to talk it through a little longer than, say, a visual person. Now, kinesthetic people go with what they feel. Not only in a tactile way, but also internally. They're more into feelings and emotions. And a kinesthetic person would say things like, that feels right to me. I'll be in touch with you. Did you feel that? I understand how you feel. I can sense it. And you'll hear those words like feel, touch, hold, connect. And that makes a big difference. So adapt and customize to them. It will make a big difference in your ability to connect and persuade them because you're talking their language. Remember, we're all different people. Remember, the big mistake in influence is you tend to influence others how you like to be influenced instead of how they want to be influenced. Understand that a bored mind says no. If they're not listening, if they're indifferent, if they're confused, they will tune out. Do you think attention spans are all-time high or all-time low? What do you think? They are dropping fast. They're at all-time low. And most people, if they really try to concentrate, will go around 13 to 18 minutes, and that's really pushing it. Especially with the MTV generation growing up, that all the stimulus, the people can now text while they're listening to their iPod, while they're driving, not that they're supposed to, but we can do a lot more at once. And so we need a lot more stimulus, a lot more energy in the presentation. So your goal, when you see them drifting, is to keep their attention. You can do that by asking a question. Top persuaders ask 3 times more questions than the average persuaders. And when you ask the right questions, they'll tell you everything you need to know to persuade them. You can use a startling statement or statistic that grabs their attention. But if you really want to keep them involved, number one, or you've lost their attention, you want to grab it back, we need to talk a little bit about stories. Highly influential and charismatic people are great storytellers. Why are stories important? No matter what you're doing, someone tells a story, it grabs attention. You start to listen. Especially if you're dealing with an idea or a vision or a product or service that's complex, it will simplify complex ideas. And the great thing here is you can persuade without detection. Because what happens when you tell a story is they put themselves in the story, they're living the story, and while you're doing that, they're persuading themselves. So you should always have a relevant story that happened to you or somebody else, that somebody was in the same situation, they didn't do anything about it, and this is a terrible thing that happened. Or they were in the same situation, they did do business with you, and they made this much money, or they saved their home, or their profits went up. Whatever it is, you can really persuade without detection. And a lot of times, too, it can demonstrate who you are. If you want people to know that you're honest, and you tell them that you're honest, they won't believe you. But if it's embedded in a story about the one time you helped this person out, and this happened, they're going to decide for themselves that you're an honest person. So if you are going to tell these stories, make sure they're relevant, of course, to what you're talking about. You're not just telling a story to tell a story. Stories are better if they're personal or you know the person, but they don't have to be. Paint the picture where they can see it, taste it, touch it, and feel it. Because as we interview people after someone's tried to persuade them, they'll say things like, it was like I was listening to a movie or watching a movie. It came alive to them. Practice your stories. A lot of ways, it's like humor. You've heard a joke before, you laughed, you told somebody, and it didn't work. Because the delivery is very important. And you need to have purpose. A purpose for that story. Make sure these stories are believable. Now, always truthful, but not everything truthful is believable. And I can't reiterate it enough that stories are a power tool for persuaders. They automatically create involvement and radiate with the person that you're talking to. Because your goal is for them to arrive at your conclusions and they can persuade themselves through a story. Try to be passionate about it. Radiate that passion, that feeling, and be authentic. Be authentic, genuine, and sincere. Goes a long way with stories. Your story must fit your audience, though. Adapt stories to different people, different demographics. It should support your message. And stories are much easier to tell if it's something that you have lived, you've learned from, or a story that you love. Make the character in the story identifiable, meaning it's like them. And make sure it answers their question. Remember, as a persuader, you're a problem solver. And if you can answer their question through a story, they persuade themselves, they get involved, and it's much easier to influence them to do what you want them to do. And of course, always paint the picture. Have them hear the movie. Be generous in your details. But with that also, you don't need to make it a 10-minute story. You can be very powerful in a 1 or 2-minute story. Make it vivid. Capture their senses. If you were to ask someone to salivate, they couldn't say salivate now. They couldn't do it. But if you painted the picture of taking a bite of a lemon, or painted the picture of walking along the beach where it transported them there, or the graphic details of a broken bone, that paints the picture. Because you can generate emotions and feeling when you can really become a great storyteller. Get them involved as much as possible. Help them persuade themselves. And persuasion influence becomes much easier. So this is what I want you to work on. This is what I want you to think about. I want everybody that you talk to, whether you're trying to persuade them or not, to get them to ask you to do what you want them to do. If you want to go out to lunch, start asking questions and telling stories and get them to say, hey, let's go out to lunch. Or if you want them to ask you about what you do for a living, ask them first, paint the picture, get yourself to seek that type of involvement from them. Get them to see themselves doing what you're asking them to do. Persuasion's much different when you can get the other person to ask you, hey, what do you do for a living? Or how can you help me? Or are your services available to anyone? Try to do that in even a situation where it's really not that important that you influence them, whether it's going out to lunch or getting a teenager to volunteer to do housework or do the dishes or to go with you on an errand. Simple things like that to getting someone to ask you about your product, service, or idea. Just kind of think it through. How can you tell a story, ask a question, reveal a statistic or statement that'll get people to say, hey, tell me more, or can you help me? And that's one thing we teach. It's called the elevator pitch or your verbal business card, is that if you can get people to say, hey, what do you do for a living? Instead of vomiting, hey, I'm doing this and this and this, it makes a much different scenario. So I want you to think about this week. How can you get other people to ask you to do business with them, ask them to get more information about what you do, and that can be done with a story, with some type of a question, or some type of even startling statement. That's your homework. That's what I want you to work on, because when you can get them involved, when you can make your problem their problem, they are much more open to persuasion and influence.